Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Open your hearts.
Loosen your butts.
It's time for couples therapy.
Wait, did you say you were going to say the last part or we were going to do it together?
We're going to do it together.
Okay, so that's what we did.
We did it. I think.
Okay, so we actually did it perfectly.
Yeah, no notes.
Yeah, this podcast is Andy and Naomi's, where they can both laugh and hang with all their homies, talking excellent vacationing with brunches and cuddling, to messy situationships and conscious and coupling, from Netflix hookups to single them with some Hulu, tech, sex, regrets, or feeling on your new jubu. They gon' talk about it, yeah, you are invited, needing therapy, I guarantee, baby, we got it.
It's couples therapy, couples therapy.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Couples Therapy. My name is Naomi.
And my name is Andy.
And we're a real-life couple.
A real-life couple of comedians.
And on Couples Therapy, we answer a couple of questions from a couple of listeners. Ain't that the tooth, sister girl?
We literally just ended the special Twitch show, the Couples Therapy quarantine party : mental health check-in Twitch show. It was a wonderful time, with one glaring exception, and that was Mabel spending literally the entire hour running around the apartment licking up fuzz from the ground.
At one point, she went behind the TV and I had to free her from a tangle of cords. It was so wild.
Sorry, you go on.
Well, we just chilling the whole dang day. And then the moment we got to do something, we got company over, so to speak.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I was going to say, it's like the minute she hears open your hearts, loosen your butts, she's like, time to fucking go off.
Time to fuck shit up.
That's like her. Wait, do you think maybe, Naomi, not to like think that she's like the Manchurian candidate or something, but do you think that was a code word for her in her former owner?
Using the word butts, maybe?
Yeah, hearts and butts. If she hears hearts and butts, she's like, oh, time to go crazy.
Flip a switch.
Time to go ham. John Ham.
Where did that even come from, the phrase go ham?
I do not know.
Because it's like, if anyone listening knows, please tell me. I don't feel like searching the internet. So just tell me, and whatever you say, I believe.
Well, it comes from pork farmers
in the
1930s Dust Bowl.
I get what it is to pig out, you know?
Sure.
Eat like a big old pig.
Sure.
But to go ham? Ham is meat.
You sounded so much like Jerry Blank there.
Thank you very much. Uh-huh. Pizza, pizza, pizza.
So, folks, we got comments. Mm-hmm. We get comments all the time. I can't play them all.
No, we can't.
But
there are only so many hours in a day, okay?
But I do try to, I will say this too, by the way. If you are going to call in to either leave a comment or a voicemail advice question, try to do it from like a quiet place, from knowing like that the cell connection is pretty good. Because there have been a couple recently where like it was just, I couldn't hear it.
Right. And you have to maybe do it while you're watching A Quiet Place, because that's actually a pretty silent film.
Or like go to the top of a cell tower near your house.
Climb to the top of a cell tower.
Because it really does like break my heart a little bit, because I'm like, oh, someone's calling in and being kind of vulnerable.
Yeah, totally.
And it's just like,
my dad, my soul.
And I feel bad because you don't know. You just think we've rejected your question.
Right. Right, right, right.
I will tell you this. If your question is clear, we will use it on the show at some point.
At some point.
At some point.
Yeah.
All right. But so, if you remember Pat Regan's episode,
I never forget.
A caller had called in and they said that they have just come out as non-binary. Mm-hmm. and they want to know the best way to tell their coworkers. They work in a pretty corporate environment. Yeah, yeah. How do they tell their coworkers?
Right, the pronouns.
And we had some ideas. Some other people had some ideas. So let me read this. This came to us, I think, from Instagram. Hi, Andy and Naomi. I love your podcast. I never thought I'd send anything in, but I was listening to the dilemma of the most recent episode regarding pronouns, and I actually had a recent experience with this. A good way to quote-unquote come out without putting in too much emotional labor is putting your pronouns in their email signature, especially in a remote work environment. It's a clear way to show how they wish to be addressed. As for the recent experience, if interested, a client put their pronouns in their signature, and my conservative boss was baffled by this. I ended up doing the emotional labor in this scenario to walk him through, but... And then the shruggy lady emoji. Anyway, I hope the caller finds a solution that works best for them. Also, if they are in the U.S., the great resignation is happening. So make your boss uncomfortable. We're all unstaffed. Who cares? what could they really do about it?
That is real talk.
XO. XO. Okay. And then we got a voicemail.
Ooh, we love it.
So listen to this.
Hi, Andy and Naomi and illustrious guest. I just paused the episode with Pat Reagan to share my insight on the listener who called in asking about their pronoun update while working in a corporate space. I am also non-binary. I use they, them pronouns, and I also present very femme and work in a corporate space. And I was very fortunate when I started in this role a few months ago that I started out with my pronouns and I'm in a space where that was receptive. However, I do work with finance adults, I guess, old finance people. So it is new for them. But what I have found was very helpful, which is sort of a kudos to my boss for taking the time to ask me about it. I was able to ask him how he would suggest I bring it up in meetings where we have external sort of shareholders that we're speaking with. And he said that he would take that on as his responsibility and introduce me with my pronouns, which he does still do, and that was very nice. But in times where he wasn't around as much and I could hear my coworkers misgendering me a lot, what I ended up doing when it kind of reached the point where I realized they weren't correcting themselves is at the end of a meeting, I just said, hey, I know, I just wanted to say thank you to everyone for doing their best with my pronouns. I know it's new to a lot of you, and if you ever have any questions about how to use they, them pronouns, or in your case, they, she pronouns, or whatever your new pronouns are, feel free to ask me. And I know that's hard when you're not feeling as confident in it, but being able to share a link with them is really good. But I sort of found that just sort of putting a little bit of gratitude in, honestly, it made them feel awkward enough that they just fixed it right away, but it didn't make the situation awkward, if that makes sense. So, my 2 cents on that is just thank everyone for doing their best and for continuing to work on themselves learning. And I hope that helps a little bit. Maybe it doesn't, but you're not alone in being a non-binary corporate person. So just figured I'd share. Thanks. Bye.
There was a Curb Your Enthusiasm episode recently where he's like, all you have to do is say, I'd really appreciate it. And people do what you want them to do.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I really appreciate that. I tried it. we'll see if it works. But I've been trying to get this one guest on Beginnings for a long time, for years. And their publicist finally was like, yeah, okay, let's do this. But the time they gave was like early in the morning, West Coast time.
Yeah.
So I said, I can do that, but I would really appreciate if we could push it a little later in the day. We'll see if that works.
Right. That's so funny.
This is good advice.
This is very good advice. Really thoughtful. You know I love our listeners. They're so sweet, sweet angels.
Speaking of good advice, Naomi.
Ooh,
our guest today.
They're giving it.
Giving good advice. Who are our guests?
Our guests are hilarious comedians and hosts of the podcast Stradiolab, George Sivaris and Sam Taggart. George is also an editor at Gawker. Sam cracks me up, and we worked together briefly a couple of years ago, and it was very exciting. And their podcast is so funny because they literally unpack straight culture. And so it is hilarious, and they have wonderful guests.
You were on. You were a guest.
Well, absolutely. I did just say they have wonderful guests. And then you said you were on. And I was like, uh-huh, trying to be subtle. So this was a real fun one. I always love when we get to talk to fun friends and try to make them go deep.
Yeah. So I guess everyone have a great Thanksgiving.
Everyone have a great Thanksgiving. We're thankful for you.
Eat a lot of rolls and mashed potatoes. That's basically what I'll be doing.
That's what Andy will be eating. Yep. Yep, rolls and mashed potatoes.
And without any further ado,
roll it!
And just to give some context on where I'm coming from, this hour of my day, as I said, is going to be the best part of it by far. And the way I'm just luxuriating in the limitations, like, I don't want it to end. I already can sense that it's going to end at some point, and that stresses me out. And I feel like if I stop talking, it will end faster.
Okay. There's so much to unpack.
George, aren't you like a writer for Gawker now?
Yeah.
So shouldn't the rest of your day have been full of fun?
Like, well,
dragging,
first of all,
dragging Hulk Hogan?
Yes, of course. I mean, there is my job. Let me tell you something about this job. I love it so much. And every single day, I thank God, who I believe in, for giving the job to me personally.
Yeah.
And when I say I had a difficult day, it was stressful, but it only reinvigorated my desire to do my job to the best of my abilities.
Really?
It was just a Monday. You know what I mean?
Oh, honey, say no more.
Yeah, we are Garfieldaholics over here.
Yeah.
I got to say, should we all go around and say something true but maybe negative about Peter Thiel and see if he sues Couples Therapy and Stradio Lab out of existence?
Yeah, hey. I'll go first. True but negative? He's gay.
We can end there. So you were saying, though, I forget if it was Sam or George was saying before, nostalgia is problematic. You said this before,
George,
we started recording.
Yes, nostalgia is problematic. Do you care to expand on that?
Yes. Well, this is a concept I came up with. And what I meant by it is simply that, you know, not to call Andy out, but as a straight white man, often, you know, I can sense Andy's kind of the type of person who's like, God, if only I could wear my bow tie and have my handlebar mustache and live in a different era, things would be so simple, without thinking really that everyone else in this Zoom would have a more difficult time because of our rights.
I'd like to throw something back at you. Straight white. How about straight Jew?
Whoa.
Wow. Wow, really erasing my Jeweth, my Jeweth? Jeweth?
Yeah, you're Jeweth.
You're Jeweth.
My Jewethness.
Yeah.
And that's true. And in fact, that is my blind spot.
So
peeking
I just
out
to, yeah.
there.
Yeah.
To accuse you of romanticizing the past, considering that element.
Problematic.
Was
problematic.
Actually more problematic than romanticizing the past to begin with.
So I think we should play the game. Who's the most problematic in this on this podcast right
Peter
now.
Thiel.
Don't say that, Naomi. We're going to get sued. He's going to take all our Patreon earnings.
I need us to focus on a real conversation because I don't have the energy for banter.
Wow. You have the wrong guests.
I know. I'm like, this is the complete opposite of like what we're used to.
I know. I'm going to make you be real with me emotionally.
Wait, that's not true. When we did one of the like live Twitch shows over the pandemic, the couples therapy quarantine parties, I felt like you were real with us there.
We can be real.
It's possible. I mean, I also just feel like, you know, who knows what we were going through. The pandemic had probably broken us down to shells of our former selves, so we had nothing to be but real at that point.
That's right. We'll switch to real in a heartbeat.
Okay, great. I'm glad. Well, I just couldn't. You know what? It's just so funny because I didn't sleep last night, and then I was up from 3 to 5 watching Will and Grace, and then tried to get back in the bed. And then when Andy left the bed at like 6, I went over to his side of the bed.
The dog was too warm.
That's why he
left. I overheated. It was like Mabel was like curled up right in on my back, and it got so hot in the bed. I went and slept on the couch until morning.
Well, we're also very rarely in the bed at the same time. We like don't really. We overlap for like 2 to 3 hours a night.
So, all right. Well, honey, that's enough.
But I didn't. It's just sometimes it's like I just didn't sleep, and it was just one of those. I woke up and I said, end it all. Do you know what I mean? When you're just like so tired and also so frustrated by the fatigue that it's like end it all. And so, you know, when you came on, George, and you said you had had a day, I said, thank you. Thank you. Someone else who can't. Someone else who can't even.
Right. Yeah. And to me, just to really contextualize it, because I don't want anyone to think it was because of my job, which I love. I just got back from a trip. I was in a wedding in Maine.
Wow.
And you know what they say. If only I had a vacation from the vacation. And that's how I woke up feeling today.
I understand that.
Almost quoting Naomi's act. Almost. You're this far away from
it. They would never. Now, Sam,
well, most of my comedy is almost quoting Naomi word for word.
Sam, what's your darkness today?
What's my darkness today? I feel like I'm sort of working my darkness. I had a really dark last week. Mm-hmm. And so today I've made a vow to not let the darkness take me. Mm. This week I woke up and I said, you know what? It's time to get a little headstrong again. It's time to be a little push through. Mm. Just I'm trying to this today. I decided to be confident and let that sort of drive me.
Okay, great. I'm a bad influence for stuff like that. If you're trying to come out of a hole, I'm not the one you talk to.
Naomi's on the edge of the hole with a shovel hitting your fingers.
Stay in there. Stay in the hole. The water's warm. That's how I feel about being in a hole. But Andy, why don't you take over a little bit?
Sure. Let's delve into your friendship.
Yes, we must delve.
Oh, because I know nothing about your friendship.
That's true.
I know Sam. I barely know George. I know Sam. I think I had been doing comedy a year or two, a couple years before you started, and I remember reading a one-act play about Entourage, I think, at one of your shows.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
I wrote a very existential, where like they, if like the characters from Entourage had like deep existential beliefs, I think I wrote a one-act play about them.
And you made people like read the parts, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. He will force audience participation. That was a good time in the past. But yes, when did you guys connect? Because George, you came to New York a little later, right?
Yes, I started doing stand-up in Boston when I was there for grad school, back when I had other aspirations. Mm. And even there was some possibility of me having a consistent career. It was the grad school was for, it was called Comparative Media Studies, and in my defense it was fully funded.
So not Harvard.
So no it was not Harvard.
But where did we meet?
We met, first of all, I did know Sam before. I had, like, you know, when you're in a lesser city, you kind of romanticize, you know, you look at the New York and the LA comedians and you're like, God, if they probably think I'm garbage, like, you know, if only I could get into New York Comedy Festival, then maybe I could meet Sam Taggart. So I knew of Sam before I think he knew who I was, but I think we probably met when I did Sam's show Stevie in its very, very earliest iteration. And then I feel like we were just always in the same, in similar friend groups, similar circles. And like, we were friends and we liked each other. But before we started the podcast, I don't think we were like best friends. Like, I think doing the podcast like very much brought us closer together. To where now I feel like he's the person I go to with many toxic feelings.
Let's list them all.
It was all very businessy up top.
That's right.
And it was sort of like repeated, like being around each other. Then it was like, well, why don't we, there's something here. Why don't we try something together? Which is sort of I feel like the opposite way how most podcasts and friendships start. But it worked, I feel.
Yeah. I think also we have very different comedy styles. And I think I can only speak for myself, but I think that like being around Sam and being exposed to his, like the way his brain works and the way he thinks has made me like a better writer and comedian, because it has like opened my mind to different ways of thinking. And I feel like we've like made it, we've like been influenced by one another.
I think that's very brave to work with a friend before you knew you were besties, really. Because I'm like, once you kind of commit to doing something long term, like that's when you're going to find out whether it works. You know what I mean?
Yes.
You didn't really know before then. It's like, do you believe in doing things on time and making them not garbage? I won't know until we're working together.
Yeah. I mean, that was a lot of my working friendships before this, where I'm the one who's like, all right, let's do this for real. And they're, a lot of them were just like, yeah, no, I don't want to be obsessed with writing a punchline. I don't want to be obsessed with writing a musical about a centaur.
Right.
Half of the year, like you, like you want to be. I would like to have a family life.
yeah. We went through, like, I remember distinctly early on, I went through a lazy phase, and Sam had to call me in and say, have you noticed how I've been doing all the work for the past 2 weeks? Okay. And then I, at first, was defensive, and then I was like, maybe he's got a point.
Yeah. But it was, which is, you know, an important part of a working and just general relationship.
Yes.
You got to be able to talk about the tough stuff.
Well, I was going to say, who taught you to, I was like, that's like very mature and direct, Sam. Were you always mature and direct like that? Because I'm very impressed that you would just say, especially like you only let it go 2 weeks. I feel like, Andy, you would let that shit go 2 years. And then I'd be like, say something.
I would let it go for the entire, until the thing fell apart.
Yes.
Not now. But I mean, then the thing would fall, like we'd be screaming at each other, it would fall apart. And then a year later, I'd write an email and be like, man, you know, I really wish you had done X, Y, or Z.
Yeah, I think I just felt like I don't think I'm always responsible or mature. I think it was like that I was just sort of like forced to, like I was kind of like, oh, I can't do everything, and like I was very like time sensitive, like I was like, this has to come out on these times, and so I was sort of like, okay, I'm, because I was like, I was sort of getting like pissy, and then I was like, hold on, like just say something, I feel like it will be uncomfortable but only temporarily. And it was like a trust also that George would like receive it well, and that it would, like, because with some people, you know, I've got friends in my life that I would never talk to about something because I'm like, you're a psychopath. And
dear close personal friends who you also believe are
wait,
psychopaths.
These psychos are friends?
Yes.
Oh, you have to have a couple of friends who are psychopaths.
I would say the majority of our friends are psychopaths.
Why do you have to? I can understand how there are psychos in all our, like, this business attracts psychos.
Yeah.
What's the have to have part?
Well, honestly, okay, if we're being completely honest, I feel like it's because, like, it's hard to, you can't, like, not, it's easier, they're going to be around. So, and they're going to be, like, at the party, they're going to be at the 10-person hang. So it's like, you got to find a way to, like, befriend them in a somewhat way, because you just will have to be around them.
Sometimes they are interesting. Like, sometimes psychos are interesting and are, like, fun to hang out with. And also are, like, very funny and very talented.
Yeah.
So, not
psychos
always.
Are dynamic. Psychos can be very dynamic.
They are. You know what's not good is when people are psycho because they're like, oh, great, this is the community where I can be psycho. But then it's like, wait, but you're not talented?
Yeah.
So you're just the psycho.
You're just here to be, to kind of like suck the air out of the room.
Right.
And
then
sort of be like, okay, I'm done. But
wait, hold on.
Andy, that does not satisfy
him. Give me an example. You don't have to say anyone's name.
Sure.
But what is an example of a psycho you have? Because I feel like Naomi and I have done a very good job of building boundaries between us and psychos.
Which is why our careers aren't as far along as they should be. We need to accept more psychos. That is a problem.
That is a fair. I did talk about that in therapy today.
That's a good question, though. Like examples of psycho behavior that I've tolerated.
I mean, it's hard because I'm paranoid that if I say anything slightly specific, I will put a target on my head.
Well, you're like, well, this one guy I knew sued Gawker out of existence.
Yeah, that really ruined my friendship with Peter Thiel when that happened.
But he's such a dynamic performer. And like,
yeah, he really knows what he's doing.
When he leads those Facebook board meetings, my God, it takes my breath away.
Yeah, it's that improv energy. It's the yes anding of all of Mark Zuckerberg's most crazy ideas.
Oh, God.
Okay, so I still would love it if you could think of something psycho, but while you're kind of marinating on that, you're both in romantic relationships, correct?
Yes.
Correct.
Now, Sam, you've been in your relationship for 45 years, correct?
Yeah. Seven and a half years.
Wait, for real?
Seven and a half. A long time. And George?
Almost two.
Okay. So, like, pandemic.
Like, we got together December 2019, early December 2019.
Wow. Okay. Wow. Okay. And you made it through. You made it through. That's gorgeous. Now, do you guys talk to each other about your relation, your romantic relation, given that you both know each other's partners and are like around these people all the time? Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we dish.
Yeah.
I think we dish. I think we dish and we do it very responsibly.
I agree. And I'm like, and we both say, if we're like, we both say the positive and the negative things, I would say.
We're very ethical dishers.
Yeah, we are. Actually, I would say that's like an element. That's like somewhere where we are so aligned that it makes conversations pleasant because we both know what our limits are in terms of dishing.
We also understand like if you're going off on your lover, then you also know it's like temporary. Like, I think we both understand, or at least that's how I feel, where like, if you're ever going off, I'm like, well, yeah, this is this moment because he's in this mood, but it like doesn't mean that like the partner is always this type of way or whatever.
Right. I think it helps that we both like each other's partners too, because there's nothing worse than someone complaining about their partner and then you're like, yeah, he sucks. Like, we're in agreement. Like, let's take this to its natural conclusion.
Right, right. I mean, it's, except I will say it's funny because you're like, oh yeah, this is a moment in time. Whereas me, you know, honey, I got a card catalog up here. So if you start saying the same thing, if you say it like three times, now I've kept it in the vault and I'm like, you know what? This is a sick pattern, and you've gotten, this person has to go.
Yeah, you're like Joan Rivers with her joke files.
Exactly. I pull out a card, and I'm like, always late. We need to talk about this. This person does not respect you.
Wait, I want to go back for 1 second, though, because what if I went back to like the psycho thing? No, what I want to go back to is, you know, you guys started this off, you were friends, right? But you were like, it was more businessy. In quotes,
I mean,
right?
We were friends, like we weren't like not friends, but I would say our friendship grew. We weren't like best friends who then were like, we need to monetize our best friendship. Like it was, it was like
we were like friends. Comedy friends.
We were comedy friends. We were in semi-similar places in our careers. Maybe, I don't know if I mean, maybe right?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah.
Had similar like. I mean, we both like had wanted to do something. We realized we were like aligned in our vision for it. So we were like, oh, this would be like a great thing to do together. And then I would say like, because we worked so closely together and B, because so much of it was during the pandemic where like for a while, like truly the two people I was talking to were like my boyfriend and Sam. And so I think like that also brought us closer together as well. But sorry, what was the question?
I was going to get there. Do you remember when you realized that the friendship had deepened past like into like a genuine friendship?
Sam?
And while you're thinking, I'll go back to ask you, do you remember a psycho behavior?
I do honestly think it was like, and maybe this is, I'm not trying to like just cling to the negative, but I do think it was like getting through the first fight was sort of like, okay, we are being real with each other. Mm-hmm. Like we can be like the honeymoon's over, honey. Like now we're like talking to each other real.
Yeah. I would say there came a point where I realized that like Sam was my go-to person to talk to about many things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that nothing was off limit. Like even I could like complain to Sam about a mutual friend of ours that we both know well and that neither of us dislike. It was, you know, but
yeah,
it's
yeah,
like
yeah.
If I have like a specific complaint about someone, there's no one I wouldn't go to Sam about, even if it's someone he's really close to or whatever, and we can like talk it out and then move on. So being like the go-to person for just like little petty complaints, right.
Safe space. You could go to him and it wasn't gonna he wasn't gonna say anything or mm-hmm. start anything or be like, you shouldn't think that way.
Right.
I care about her. I hate when people do that. I'm always like, yeah, I'm sure someone I love is a piece of shit to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But, like, I'm willing to hold both of those things in truth. They both can exist.
Yeah.
I think I want to, like, try to give you a psycho example because I feel like I don't want it to be a cop-out. I think a big part, and this is not specific, but a big part of it is, like, you know when you're talking to someone and it's, like, 80% of what they're saying, you're fully there and you're, like, you know, you're having a great conversation, things are bouncing back and forth, but you know that there's that 20% where they're saying things that are not coherent. Like their mind is not working properly. Like either maybe it's a narcissism thing where like you can tell that they think they're literally the best person in the world and they think it's like the biggest injustice that they're not hosting the Tonight Show or like, so it might be narcissism. It might be on the other end of things. It might be like insane insecurity where like you can see someone is like very broken down and is like deep in a deeply dark place or whatever. Like, but you like them enough that you're able to look past the psycho parts of them because they bring enough to the table.
I get that.
I mean, not the juiciest. No. I'll think about it.
Well, we have to be tasteful and tactful.
I do think the narcissism thing, though, is real. Like, there are people I genuinely am friends with that I'm like, you are a narcissist.
Yeah. Well, of course. And I think the insecurity is correct, too, though, because I do think there's some of us where it's like, oh, I can see your wound. Your wound is gaping right now.
Right.
You know what I mean? Kind of like leading with the need first.
Yes.
Before you even kind of know.
Most of us have bandages on. And then there's some people that are just walking wound first.
Yep. Into the world. Wound first. And then I'm just like, honey, no. You know, some people tell you let it air out. No, cover it. Okay. Cover it. Neosporin. I don't want to see it.
Well, it's tough because then people are able to walk around with no Neosporin and actually do it in, you know, are able to do it in the right way that it comes across as profound and,
Or charming, even.
Or charming.
Yeah.
So then people see that and they're like, oh, that's what we're doing now. I guess I'll take off my bandages and throw out the Neosporin as well.
Right. Machine Gun Kelly and Megan.
Yes.
For example. I really thought it was going to be something like, oh, yeah, this guy was telling me about how he picked up a hitchhiker and then took him the wrong way.
That's what I like. Oh, no, never mind. Not that. Not the murdering or whatever. But, like, generally, when people are crazy, I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. It's only when it's, like, I think the subtler psycho, like, is worse. Like, just the person who, like, is, you know, yeah,
insidious.
A full narcissist and, like, destroying people left and right. But
there are also
in the guise
people
of being kind.
There are also people that are, like, not smart. Like, there are people we know that, like, have never read the news. And that's also, like, you have to, like, look past. Like,
yeah.
You know, just, like, or that, like, are only read the internet and their beliefs are just, like, remixed words they've heard on the internet. They're like, you know, the police are body positive. Like, they just, like, don't.
Oh my god, that is very real, very accurate.
Here's a question.
Ooh.
I was thinking about this yesterday. But we just talked to Pat Regan, and I called Pat part of the Irony Kids, which I will throw you guys in the same bucket. But I'm kind of curious because, like, it's obviously like it's not irony for irony's sake. It's obviously like part of your personality. Like, it comes from who you are as people. I'm kind of curious how you navigate that in your relationships with your boyfriends, because it, I as someone who grew up in the 90s, or was a teenager in the 90s, you know, irony was like omnipresent then, and then it went away, and now it's, I think it's come back again. So I feel a lot of consonance with you guys. But and, but I found when I was when it was I was in full irony mode, it was very difficult to have like it was very difficult in my romantic relationships.
That's a tough cue.
Well, I was going to say I should have ran this by you, because when I did Stradio Lab and I told them they were like the cool, like ironic kids, George wasn't having it.
Oh,
and,
really?
And no. so I really had to peel it back. And so Naomi, I was like, you can't label George as ironic.
I remember during the episode, you thought that at one point I gave you a look. And then after that, you were like, George is being weird about this. And I truly was probably like thinking about what I was like having for dinner or something. Like I promise you.
And will you tell us what you had for dinner at the end of the episode? We'll get back to that.
That's for Patreon only.
Yes. Paywall, behind the paywall. But no, I get, no, I'm teasing, but also yes, exactly.
No, but that's a good question.
Wait,
Sam, you had something you were going to say, no?
Well, I'm processing, but I feel like it's a tough thing to even, the premise is complicated, because I'm like, yeah, I could see us being kind of ironic. We're a little mean. We're a little eye-rolly about stuff. But we're also like, but it's also sincere. Like, there is a sincerity to it. Like, we are just like annoyed at stuff. Like, we're not trying to like put on a personality. It just like is there. So it, like, it's kind of built in, I feel like, to my relationship, like, where it's like, it's part of it. It's like part of the charm or something.
Let me throw this at you. If the 90s were pure irony, and then we moved into this era of pure sincerity, you are the, you guys are the synthesis of that into a sincere irony.
Well, I think, yes, I do think Sam and I, if I may speak for both of us, do have a sort of sincere irony. Like, I think that is very much the mode of, for instance, the podcast is like sincere irony. I do think a lot of the irony of the 90s, how do I put this? Like, I like to think that if I'm being somehow ironic in my outlook to things, it's not, it doesn't come from a cynicism. If anything, it's reacting to the cynicism of like a false sincerity. Like, it's like we're trying to react to, like, you know, let's say a headline that's like, this celebrity claps back at the haters for saying such and such and blah, blah, blah. And then it's like, if I'm making fun of that, that's because I think that is actually a cynical narrative that's like not in fact describing the reality of what's going on. So I am maybe attempting to use irony to like point out some form of hypocrisy. So I think like that, I hope at least that's more valuable than a kind of nihilistic irony, like than the kind of like, and I don't, I mean, I'm just thinking about something like Beavis and Butthead or something. Where it's just like, it's like,
wait,
it's
can
like
you say it again? What's the name of it?
Beavis and Butthead.
I know, but the way you were like, Butthead. Like, it was really like, it's like, what? Beavis and Butthead, I guess. which I
don't know.
Was right.
Do you see what I'm saying? Like, that's more of like a nihilism where it's like,
yeah, like, fuck everything. Everything's
everyone
stupid.
Is so I would never be like, again, like, I hate the mode that's like, oh, you're stupid for ever caring. Like, being earnest is stupid. Like, no one should ever care about things like politics or social issues or social justice. Like, I feel like maybe this new irony you're describing, Andy, is like reacting against a kind of faux earnest wokeness, kind of.
Sure.
It's interesting because I think of it more as like when you say irony, like it's for me, I think about it as like a very self-aware, self-referential comedy. Like there is a certain, you know, I would say maybe 5-6 years younger than me, meaning like in their comedy, not like necessarily their age, but like where it was like, isn't it crazy that I'm on stage right now?
Yes.
And that I'm about to tell you a joke. And that's what I wrote. Okay. That's what I wrote. And you're going to have to take it. And like, that's like kind of like
punchlines are weird.
Yeah. Like the commenting on kind of what you're doing.
Jiminy Glick energy.
But it's also such a, it is like kind of a protective wall.
Oh, 100%.
And that's why that's the thing. When I was like real steeped in irony in my romantic relationships, it was a way of protecting myself too, right? Where I don't have to like really show my feelings, because it's ironic. Like, oh, who wants to have love anyway? Ugh. Ugh. But like, I'm kind of curious. And if you are this like new, I rolled my eyes as I said the word new, just so we're clear on that. But like, I'm kind of curious is it a protective measure at all? Outside of performing, either in friendships or romantic relationships, is there still that kind of like, I'm going to have this distance so that I don't get hurt in some way? Like when it was performing for me, it was like, well, if I don't say it, if I'm not really committing myself to this joke, then if they don't laugh, who gives a shit?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. And I'm going to tag onto that. Sam, were you and your boyfriend, were you doing comedy from the moment you guys got together? Because it has been so long.
Yeah, I had been doing it for like 6 months or something when we got together, like stand up specifically.
Okay, so right. Yeah. So he knew what he was getting into. Is the point.
Yes. Oh, he and he was, it was very sort of, you should never see someone at 6 months in. It
just, absolutely not.
A bit of a sidebar, but it was really, he was like, this is what you're trying to do. And I was like, no, I know I'm bad now, but that's, this is part of it. You're supposed to be bad first.
But I think of him as a very gentle soul.
He is. He's sweet. And
yeah.
And he was down to wait until I was good at it.
You mean relationships or comedy or both?
Both.
Accurate.
Are you DTW? Down to wait?
Don't you think though? I mean, for me, it was like before I did stand up, all of that toxic, ironic energy would come out in my everyday life. So like, it's like, actually, it's very good to have that outlet, because then you will be more real and more earnest in your day-to-day life, because you don't feel like you have to put up a performance all the time. I mean, I was talking about this recently with a very good friend of mine who I've known since college, and she was like, yeah, you used to be like toxic.
Jesus.
Like, I was also like raised in a household where everyone made fun of each other as like a way of bonding. It was just like very like, and you just had to like be okay with it. And I kind of thought that's how everyone acted. And I would just like point out people's flaws. And like, I think doing stand up and having that outlet has then allowed me to be more like tender and earnest in my personal relationships.
Mm-hmm. I understand though that roasting, because I think I tend to like roast when I'm, roast to be close, you know what yes. I mean, like, and I will even though I didn't say like kind of my extended family, but I think it's more like for me there's nothing better than feeling like someone knows me, so if you point out something little, it's like, you see me, you know what I mean?
Yes.
But then of course, yeah, it can also be tough, because I did grow up with someone who felt that her job was to tell me what I was doing wrong all the time.
Sure.
So that I would be better. So, you know, it's a double-edged situation. Mm-hmm. That is very tough. But also, George, you had come out of academia before you... Well, comedy was also still happening. But, like, you were in the world of academia, and as were you, Andy, where it's like...
Yep.
You kind of can't... It's not about your emotions. It's like,
what were you doing, Andy, in academia? I didn't even know that.
I was a philosophy professor.
Oh my
Whoa.
God. Yeah.
Dark, dark, dark.
Yeah.
That's, yeah. Yeah. No, I was in academia even like up until relatively recently. Like my longest, because after grad school, my longest day job that I was doing like in New York was working as a researcher at an academic research center. Uh-huh. So I was like, it really, yeah. It's like you can't unlearn. I mean, I like to think at my best that like, that has helped me have an interesting sense of humor that I wouldn't otherwise. But it's also like, or is it useless? I don't know.
No.
I don't think it's useless, but it's alienating. No. I definitely like yeah. it changed the way I think about things. And so on one hand, I feel like I have a deeper grasp on how the world works, or why, what is it mean to be human than other people,
because of philosophy,
because
conceptually,
of philosophy,
conceptually,
but that's distancing, because like I also have like it changed my vocabulary, and I have to do a lot of filtering of like what I say something, and then I'm like, oh, these other people haven't fucking read Kant or whatever, now I have to like do some math in my head to make it accessible to a normal human being.
So Tony Soprano said
Yeah, I always have it. It's always Tony Soprano. It's always young Sheldon.
Yep.
It's like, how would these guys talk about these deep subjects?
Well, you kind of think that it's like that over intellectualizing something is the most kind of like moral and important thing you can possibly do.
Mm-hmm.
And you train yourself that way. And then I think once you let go of that, you realize, oh, that's actually only one mode of thinking that can be very good. But it doesn't mean that people who think a different way or people who process the world a different way are like less thoughtful.
Right. Mm-hmm. 100%. But I do think there is a kind of like, I have gained this kind of conceptual sophistication that I think like other people, when I see other people angry on Twitter about something and I'm just like, oh yeah, well, that's just how it works. Mm-hmm. Like media or something like that, where I'm just like, yeah, well, I've read, you know, the first chapter of Manufacturing Consent.
The first chapter.
Well, yeah, that's just the part. I've read the whole thing, but I'm saying that's the part that like says like, this is how the media works. And so everyone's like screaming about stuff. And I'm just like, yeah, that's just how it works.
What do you, right. Like, people are like, wait, misinformation online?
I'm like, yeah, that's just how it is. Like we could do something about it. We can organize and do something else about it. But like screaming about it here is not going to do much. Mm-hmm. So yeah,
let's say I'm talk, please.
I love George's formal training. I find that, you know, so often it hops in and saves us, you know, in emails. This guy can send an email that would make your head spin. We've been in meetings before where they'll ask us like a really vague question that they don't even really know the answer to, and he'll like answer it in such a way that is like a little dance, and it also like and it also like kind of puts it back in their face in a fun way. And ooh. I just, you know, sometimes it's nice in those situations to just feel a little taken care of.
Yes. You know,
because yes. It's like, yeah, I could respond, but it would probably be a little clunkier, like as far as the you know, finding those words in that time, I'm not the best at that, but I'm I can sit back and I can say, oh, George, unleash yourself on them.
unleash yourself on them.
Wait, quick, before we get into the advice questions, I'm kind of curious. So George, 2 years, Sam, 7.5 years. What were your relationships like before
the current
relationships?
George, you first.
I had, so my first relationship was very short, but it was very formative. It was in college with, in fact, someone named Sam. He was like my best friend. And then we like got together and it didn't work out. But then after we broke up, we were like still remained really good friends. I mean, we're not like super close right now, but like for many, many years, we would like see each other when we were in the same city. Like I really, really, you know, we were able to like save the friendship, and it was like overall a positive experience. And it was also like nice that my first boyfriend was someone I felt so close to. So it was, mm-hmm. you know, fine. Then that was just like very short. Then my main, like my longest relationship, I was with someone for 6 years.
Oh.
And that was like end of college, like senior year of college through pretty much most of my 20s. So that was who I was dating before comedy, when I started comedy, when I moved to, like when I went to grad school, when I moved to New York, like all these, mm-hmm. every like milestone I had until the age of like 26, 27, was with him. And I think now we're in a good place, but it ended in like, there was like an event that happened that was very traumatic. Mm. That resulted in the relationship ending, and it was a very like eventful breakup.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then we were like, it was also because we were living together in New York. We ended up having to live together for literally like 5 months post breakup.
Oh God, that is a nightmare. Yeah.
We had like mutual friends that there were like mini dramas with in terms, you know, like
yeah,
you can imagine. But yeah, that was like my longest, and we were together for 6 years, and it was very much like, I was very close with his parents. I had spent
mm-hmm.
many holidays with him. Like he had come to Greece like 3 summers in a row to see my family. Like,
yeah, it was very intertwined, right? Yes, your lives were very intertwined.
Well,
yeah.
It's also like we grew up together because we were together from like literally the time we were in college to all the possible firsts you could have in your 20s.
Right, right, right. Okay, here's a question, though, about when you have to live with somebody and after you've broken up. Did y'all still sleep in the same bed?
Yeah.
I was wondering the exact same thing.
We did sleep in the same bed. We kind of reached... There was almost something after all the... Like, it was so clear that we needed to break up. And after all the drama and the actual act of it, we almost were able to, like, breathe and just, like, enjoy each other's company. Hmm. Like, I have a very... actually like positive memory of my birthday is in July, and so we probably broke up around like May. So my birthday after our breakup, we just the two of us went and had like a really nice meal together, and it was almost like a very sweet goodbye, and we had like just like a really nice conversation and like took photos as though we were like still together. Like it was just like there was something about it that was like, I almost think those part of that time was like the closest we had felt, in the sense that we like knew everything there was to know about one another, including the fact that we shouldn't be together.
So, right. The ultimate honesty, basically. It was like, it wasn't real.
I mean, and again, we went through like many dark months before we reached that point, but like, it's almost like we like went through it and came out the other side. Mm-hmm. And then like, I don't know. Somehow, like, I remember when we moved out, it was like we were like being nostalgic with one another about like moving out and the relationship being over.
Wow. That's a lot. But both of these things sound emotionally healthy in the end. You know what I mean? Like, for both of them, like, you're still, you know, you were able to get a handle on it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting because this ex that I was just talking about, like, we're not really in touch that much. And I think a big part of it is just like, there's so much history that like, it would require like another long effort to get back to. But I'm like, I'm very proud that we've gone to a place where we like say happy birthday to one another on our birthdays. And like, I was thinking like, maybe he lives in LA now. And I'm like, maybe if I go to LA, I would like get a coffee with him. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. I do think it also helps that I'm in a different relationship. So now it is the transition is so clear to me that there's no gray area.
Mm. Right, right, right. Now, Sam, before sweet, gentle Misha. Misha, right? Or Sasha?
No, you're right. Misha.
Thank God. Oh, good. had you had a lot of BFs?
No. I'm realizing I should have gone first and George should have gone second, because George's is so moving and mature, and mine was very, I was just a little slut around Chicago and then New York City, baby. I did like some 1-monthers. I did try to date, and like, but it went about it in like a really stupid way. And I think honestly, like, I was out to my friends, but closeted to my parents. And so I think I was kind of going about it in a closeted way, even though like I wasn't in the same city as my parents. It was just like, I was kind of trying to find people that like none of my friends would know, or like that I like almost someone that would like take me far away from all of this. And then once it was like, oh, obviously these aren't working. I'm not a full person. And so then,
right.
Once that all got figured out, I like was like, well, I'm not dating anyone. And then I started dating Misha, and I was like, well, just so you know, I'm not looking for anything serious. So, and then it all worked out.
So you had come out to your parents before y'all started dating. So you kind of, will you say kind of handled
so I
that
came
or
out,
resolved that?
I came out to them very quickly when we started dating, just because it had been like a long time coming. It wasn't like he's the one and I should come out now. It was like, I was like, oh, I meant to do this like a while ago and I haven't done it yet. And now I'm living in a different city as them. So like, I don't see them as much. So I should come out to them when I'm home or something. Uh-huh. So I had a trip coming, and we had been dating for like a few weeks when I came out to them.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm,
and very much wasn't like, this is for you or anything. Uh-huh.
That's what I mean. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. Okay.
I'm sorry I laughed, by the way. In my mind, I was you, and you go to your parents' house and you have a magnet that says I'm gay, and you just slap the magnet on the fridge. That's what was happening.
True.
That's what was happening in my head.
What a very specific image.
I mean, it would have been helpful, I think.
Wow, that 90s irony is really jumping out.
That wasn't ironic. That's literally just what I was like pretending in my head. I was like Sam in that moment.
Why would Sam ever have a magnet?
I don't know.
And slap it on a fridge.
I don't
like,
know.
You were you weren't being Sam. You were being someone else entirely. Because that scenario is not right. Okay, we need to take a break because we need to help people handle their scandal. And I think we've really gotten to the core of who George and Sam are as friends and as lovers to others.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey y'all, wanted to pop in real quick and let you know that if you like what you hear and you want to support the show, there are a couple different ways.
Most of our support comes from our wonderful Patreon community. For $5 a month, you get 2 bonus episodes of just us mostly spilling the tea and occasionally searching for crazy bread in Los Angeles, plus lots of other bonus content. We love our page pals and we couldn't do this without you. And if you want to join, go to patreon.com/couplestherapypod.
We also have merch, which includes Gotta Miss a Bitch and Jubu t-shirts, yeah, which you can find in the link tree in our Twitter or Insta bios.
And for absolutely $0, you can rate and review the show on Apple.
5 stars, please. It'll only take 10 seconds, and it helps us tremendously. Okay, that's it. We love you deeply. Now back to the show. And we're back. Stradio Lab themselves. Here to help you handle your emotional scandal.
Now, we get advice questions from Twitter, Instagram,
Gmail,
and of course, our favorite voicemail, that number, 323-524-7839. Also in our social media profiles, if you didn't catch that. This first one. Let's do it.
Hey, Naomi. Hey, Andy. Love the pod. I know you love people calling in to hear the desperation in us. I'm just at a loss. So basically, the question is this. It's a friend and a really good friend of mine that has ghosted me. And she's not the type of person that ghosts people. She's so kind, considerate, loyal, loving, all of the above. Just the most wonderful person. And this has happened once before, for like a couple months, and now it's going on 5 months, and I got one text message in between, and it was like, hey, you know, I've been busy, but I've been meaning to contact you, I promise I'll call you, and that was a month ago. So this has gone on for 5 months, and I'm not like crazy, like messaging her all the time, like once a month, maybe I'll send her like a message, or I'll call her, and there'll be no response. And it's just like I feel ghosted. Like you feel ghosted with like a boyfriend or something, or it makes no sense. And I'm left like, what the hell is going on? And obviously it could be like something really horrible or something personal, but it just seems so weird to just drop off the face of the earth. And I just feel so confused. Any words of wisdom would be appreciated. Love you guys. Bye.
Ghosted by a friend.
Ghosted by a friend.
This feels real. This feels like it's happening left and right.
Have
it's
you been
an epidemic.
Ghosted by a friend?
I think I ghost, maybe. But like not on par. I said, you know, it is very like, I think me, I am very, because I lean towards depression and am narcissistic, I'll just go through a time where I'm like, I just assume nobody wants to hear from me.
I'm
and
the so I'll same just, way.
So yeah, like I'll like let that happen and then be like, oh wait, I haven't been a bad friend.
You're Vigo the Carpathian.
How so, Andrew?
You're a ghost.
Nope. Nope.
Wow.
Nope.
Yeah. I've ghosted and been ghosted by friends. It's tough because friends are just friends, so you like breaking up with a friend that you want to see a little less of is also really weird, like, and kind of unnecessary. So there is just like a, well, if you want to see someone less, you just kind of have to see them less. And that doesn't mean you hate them. It's just like, yeah. I need a little space. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the thing is like, you can't make somebody tell you anything, right? So it's like, you've reached out and she is not really trying to hang or give an explanation. So as frustrating as it is, you almost have to just accept her boundary. I think the other option could be like being very specific, and instead of just being like, hey, hope you're well, or, you know, miss you or whatever, you can also be like, hi, would you like to get coffee Thursday or Friday at 2 p.m.? You know what I mean? Like something specific. And that can also let you know what's up, or at least you can use that in person to be like, hey, what is up with you, sis? Did you get COVID? Where are you at?
Could you, in a text, do that also as well? I don't know if this is proper. You know, I became an adult after cell phones, so.
You mean before cell phones?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Thank you. It's not like, it's not second nature to me, but like, could you text them and be like, hey, I just want to check in and see if you're doing okay. You know, we haven't talked in a while. If it's that you just don't want to talk to me,
don't respond.
Well, I'm just trying to suss out whether the friend could be going through something. I have a couple friends who, like, I know that they're going through shit, and like, we do talk to each other, but it's like, you know, every month or two. And then there'll be a long periods where we're not talking in between, because I know they're like going through some shit and they just don't have the energy and they don't want to. And there's other people who, like, it's tough to suss out whether it's that or whether they just don't want to hang out with you anymore. I've had other people who like ghosted me and it was like, but obvious that they just didn't want to hang out with me.
I like, it's so funny. I'm so defensive almost with, or not, sorry, not defensive in the traditional sense. I mean, in the like, if I ever even think there's a chance someone doesn't want to talk to me, then I will proactively stop reaching out.
Yeah. Totes. Same.
And I've actually had it happen where, like, then I do that thinking I'm like, oh, well, I get it. I don't want to make things awkward. And then that person's like, are you not talking to me? And I'm like, oh, I was doing it because I thought you didn't want to talk to me.
Yeah. Yep.
Or like, this happened. This is like probably not a good part of my personality, but like, whenever someone becomes very successful, I assume they no longer want to be friends with me.
I do that too. I do that a lot. It's bad.
And then it's like, wait, that's how these cycles are created, where like, then people who are famous feel isolated because their friends are not speaking to them.
Right. That's so true. I know. I don't know. I just am always like, because I'm like, well, everyone's busy. Everyone's struggling. I don't bring much to the table. It's like kind of how I'll be, like, where I'm like, you know, it's like, but it's not like, oh, I'm actively like, oh, I don't like her or him, don't want to talk to them. It's not that. Yeah. It's just like,
sometimes it's that.
Sometimes, but like not as much. I just noticed in LA too, I have a harder time maintaining with people. Like, I don't reach out to people as much.
I
also think about the like, it's trying to schedule something. Like if it is a friend that you're worried about like taking up too much of their time, like suggest something really easy, like a coffee, like, and just be like, we're gonna meet for a coffee and that's it, like, or we're gonna meet for lunch, because everybody's got to eat damn lunch.
Everybody's like, gonna eat damn lunch.
Something like, and non-committal is like such a gift, I find.
I agree. And to Andy's point, I do think it's better to do that in person rather than over text, because there's just like, there is just simply no way to read someone's tone over text. Like, you can be asking something like, do you just not want to talk to me anymore? And that can come across as like very aggressive. Like, you're accusing the person of something.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Also, like, I know for me, part of why I've gotten into voice notes is because sometimes to get into anything over text is too much to me. Like, it's too much mm-hmm. work to try to accurately communicate it, type it all out, get a damn, you know, semicolon up in there. Like, really try to make it make sense. That it, sometimes I'd be like, here's a voice memo. I can't even, you know? And so
if someone really drag someone in a voice memo because it disappears.
It disappears in 2 minutes. That's also very helpful. But yeah. Sometimes it can be like a lot because it is this weird putting someone on the spot and then you start to live in that world of like three dots. Are they going to respond? Did they see it? You know, it's like, no. Don't, you're just extending the stress that
yeah.
way.
Yeah.
But
let me pose this to you, the three of you. At what point would you give up on mm-hmm. on this friend, this person who's like,
George and I say immediately.
They ghosted the caller.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So they ghosted the caller for a couple months and then they were back in touch and now they've ghosted the caller for 5 months. And so you think just give up on this friendship?
I think don't give up in anger, but mm-hmm. give up
let go.
Yeah. For your own self preservation because it's just driving you crazy. And mm-hmm. If just don't be mad, and if they reach out at some point, then you'll be thrilled, and that's you can hang out again.
Yeah,
but right now you're driving yourself crazy.
Yeah. I do want to say what Naomi and I are talking about. It's that is how I am, but I'm not really proud that that's how I am. Mm-hmm. Yes, that is what I would do, but is that the advice I would give?
Right,
to
right.
I actually wish I was not. I don't know. I always wish I was one of these people that was able to maintain email correspondences with college friends and. Mm-hmm. Have you know I not kind of just go with the flow so much that at any given month I have a different group of people I'm seeing.
I think, but it's also one way you can think about something like this is accepting someone's boundaries.
Yes,
you know, if this person is saying I can't give you anything right now, hear them, accept it, you know?
Yeah.
Because I know for me, some friendships where I was I realized, and I think I talked to you about this, where I was where you're I don't know if this person is not into me, blowing me off, want to hang out. And it's just, you got to look at the pattern. If you're always the one suggesting you hang out, just see what happens when you stop reaching out. And then that'll kind of give you your answer, you know?
Right.
And And so I think it's this person, for whatever reason, is going through it. And this could be one of those friends, too. You know how people, you ebb and flow, and it could be one of those things where you're not going to hear from her until the week before her birthday, and she having a party. You know what I mean? And you, come through, and it's hi. That could just be where it is. I think, we can't underestimate the effect the pandemic has had on us in terms of relationships. Because I will say, once human interaction became potentially deadly, I realized most of these hoes ain't worth dying for. You know what I'm saying? I really stopped interacting with a whole lot of people when it was do I want to do this?
And it was weird when those people came creeping back into our lives after things started opening up.
Yeah.
You're no. So, I think that's just part of it. And it does suck, if you know, when you're this is not who this person is, but also people change, they go through shit. They get selfish. They get self-centered. You know?
All right. Well, so, but we are saying, don't be like Naomi and George. Maybe suggest a concrete thing.
And then let the response to that inform.
Yes.
And then if that doesn't go well, then just write them off.
Yep.
I think for anything, you have to try twice. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. That's very true.
That's good.
That's very true.
George W. Bush taught me that. Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Here we go.
Hi, Naomi, Andy. My name is Sam. I'm calling because me and my boyfriend of 3 years want to get married, but I was looking in his phone recently and I saw some text messages, and these text messages were from a high school, boyfriend of his, and I just, I don't know what to think now. I mean, we've been together for 3 years, and I just, I'm fed up, to be honest. I'm just, you know, that movie with, I forget what's his name, Martin Lawrence and that lady, and she like stabs the cake. That's kind of like where I'm at right now. I mean, I'm not going to stab him, but I want to stab a cake. I want to get a carrot cake from Trader Joe's, and I want to stab it. But I'm not going to do that. But anyways, my question is, how do I confront him with this? I'm a non-confrontationalist, and so it's just difficult. Like, I don't know what to do. He wants to get married. I have a feeling he's going to do something with an engagement ring or something, an engagement party, like, soon. So I feel stuck. Like, how do I get out of this? And also, like, he recently downloaded Tinder on his phone again, I also noticed. So I don't understand why. It's just fishy. And if you guys could help, that would be, your advice. Should I confront him and like dump him, or should I mean, cause I put in 3 years into this relationship. So I don't know. Should I dump him, or should I like, I don't know. So any advice is helpful. Thanks. Guys, thanks.
Oh. Sam. This is so hard. Also, Sam says he wants to stab a carrot cake from Trader Joe's.
Yeah.
Okay, this is what he has said about his emotional state.
What Martin Lawrence film?
I don't know what movie he's talking about.
I looked it up. I looked up Martin Lawrence stabbing cake, and I couldn't find it.
Was it Blue Streak?
Big
Mama's House? Black Knight? National Security?
Just listing his movies. Maybe Bad Boys, too. Now, okay, so, you know, George, when this started and he said he looked at his phone and saw some text messages, you covered your eyes. George.
You know what I'll say is, like, well, Sam can speak to this more than I can as well, or as much as I can. But, like, first of all, there is some context that I think is necessary for any straight listeners, is I do feel like the mores around monogamy are way more loose with gay relationships. And, like, I do think Tinder, which is more like relationship heavy, is obviously more of a red flag, but like it is very common for two men to be in a relationship and for both of them to have a hookup app on their phone. Like that's not something that is, you know, the same as like, you know, the scene in a movie where a woman discovers the text from an ex in her man's phone. I feel like it's, you know, I think
finds Ashley Madison.
Yes.
Right.
That's right. So I think that's like important context for all this. I think what I was really reacting to was more the tone of his voice. Cause like, it's not like, for instance, I was recently like, with my boyfriend, and he was literally like in front of me with me looking, texting his like a boyfriend he had literally like 7 years ago who he has talked about and they're now like normal friends. Mm. And the guy had literally texted him like, hey, do you have so-and-so's number? I lost it. And he was texting back like, oh yeah, here it is. And I like looked over and I was like, oh, look at you texting your ex. And he was like, yeah, he needs ex so-and-so. Like it was just like a completely normal interaction. So the idea that someone would be texting a high school ex is not in and of itself
a red flag. Yeah,
but I just like the tone with which he was saying it was so clear that he was like devastated.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
so that's what I was reacting to. I do think Tinder, having said all of that, I do think Tinder specifically is a weird one because Tinder really is more for long-term dating.
It also just felt like from his tone that they have not had that conversation about non-monogamy, and yep. It felt like that he was very that it was truly a surprise and that they've just not even discussed it, like, which I think is like, I mean, maybe you could boot camp this and like get there really quickly, but it feels like this, you should have that conversation potentially before you decide to get married. I think especially
you should,
as gay man.
Yeah, you also shouldn't, I believe you shouldn't get engaged. because of what you're very saying. Like, where you're at, y'all got to talk about some stuff. And when you say, should I, you're non-confrontational, that's fine. But confrontation is not the same as a conversation. So you can still go. Hey, I'll be preaching on it.
There's already merch. I'm making merch. It's on sale. We have it in tanks, we have it in t-shirts, and we have it in bodysuits.
You can say to him, especially because I'm like, oh yeah, you may not be able to use the fact I looked at your text messages, because it's like so hard to confront somebody in that situation because you automatically lose a leg to stand on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But you can say, I see you got Tinder. Can we talk about this? And I think if you can have that conversation, that doesn't bode well for the relationship. I also think, you know, when you say, I've already put in 3 years, I'm like, babe, you talking to somebody who's been in a relationship 7.5 years. You got us in here 11 years. Like, you can always walk away.
That's what Naomi tells me every morning.
I just, like, the thing is, everyone has been like, that is just such a destructive line of thinking to be like, but I've already invested so much, because what's worse than investing even more if you are like, if you aren't unsure about it?
Fallacy of sunk cost.
Yes, exactly.
Especially like with humans, you know what I mean? Like, it's not flip or flop, babe. So, you know, you think you're like, well, I've already refurbished this house and I've got to get a real return on my investment. And it's like, that's not how humans work.
Or it's like, it's 3 years in, you're like, I'm really miserable now. So I should probably be really miserable for the next like 30 years.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And this is why I love a voicemail, because you can hear in his voice where he's like, I'm just tired. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sick of it, frankly, you know? And like, so it's like, you're telling us where you're at with this. So when you say, should I, it's like, should you confront him? Absolutely. You're at your wit's end.
Well, not if you're calling a podcast, you should talk to
Hold on. I don't think confront, because that already starts it off.
Yes. But no, converse. You need to bring it up.
Right. Don't, like, you know, his boyfriend, almost fiance, walks in and Sam spins around in a chair.
Right.
And goes,
having printed out text messages.
And yes. Spins around in the chair, starts reading these text messages.
Or actually, no. What if the boyfriend wakes up and Sam has just like taped them all over the bedroom?
Right.
Yeah. So the first thing he sees on the wall is a text message. It's like, no, you guys can have a conversation. Right. And I think, you know, and you saying like, oh, you think he's going to propose, or you think there might be like a party or something. Have the conversation.
You have to have the conversation.
Sooner rather than later.
Also, you can't. This is like an engagement cannot be a surprise. If people are getting engaged, it needs a conversation has had to have happened about both parties deciding they want to get married.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's such an old school kind of thing too.
Yeah.
I remember, like, before we got engaged, we had a discussion about it.
Many. I sent you links to rings. Like, this is the vibe I'm feeling. You can surprise me as to when you provide me the ring,
which is what happened.
But this is what we're doing.
Right.
No, but exactly. Yeah, they need to like talk a little. They just need to talk about all of this, because I don't like the idea of Tinder on your phone or any of it, because as you said, like, if you guys haven't agreed to that.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just something they haven't talked about, and the boyfriend assumed that it was a non-monogamous relationship.
That's a psychotic thing for that.
Yeah, I mean, I do think 3 years in, you should know. Like, yeah.
I mean,
I'm just trying to come up with some kind of scenario that
I can't believe it didn't like naturally, casually come up as like even just talking to other like friends. Like, it's a normal thing to talk about. I'm surprised.
Yeah. I mean, also what we're saying, when you like you saw a text from the ex from high school, I don't know how far away you guys are from high school. So that also, you know, we don't know if y'all are like, you know, 22 or 32. And so it can kind of change that. And also, as you were saying, George, like, what is the text to the ex? Is it just like, if you're reading thinking of you or like miss you, that doesn't have to be romantic or sexual.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But again, you found
Hold on. Hold on. If I'm in contact with one of my ex-girlfriends because we were in a band together, and, you know, sometimes stuff like that still comes up.
Uh-huh.
We're like putting the stuff on Bandcamp or whatever, right? And I'm
yes.
It can be good. If I sent her a text or an email that said "miss you," that would be fucked up.
No, it would be very fucked up. But the thing is, y'all also don't communicate often. Like, you don't have her number, do you?
I don't. I actually don't know. But like,
well, how convenient. But that,
I will tell you that that's because I don't know the last time I texted her.
Exactly, right. Though. So but these are people who are in communication to the point where they like texting.
But that's what I'm saying. But no, I'm saying like, there's a difference between like, hey, can you send me X's phone number, Y's phone number, or whatever, versus miss you to me is over the line. That's way over the line.
See, I think it can be read in different ways. Like if you know, when you talk about, you know, and George, you kind of talks about this, when you have a relationship with somebody where like y'all were so part of each other's lives or so part of each other's like coming of age, where it's like,
yeah,
I know you, or you're a person where it's like,
sure.
Trust me, it can go either way. I'm not saying it's good. What I guess I'm trying to, because we don't know the type of text he saw and how the words can be interpreted.
I thought it was something like sexual from the way, like the despair in his voice. I thought it was like, like obvious kind of like, oh, he's obviously cheating on me. In some
I get, I'm just kind of like, if you see it, like to me, if you see a text that you have any doubt about and you don't immediately feel comfortable going to your partner and asking what's going on, that's the issue. No matter what.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like the text can be literally like, come over here and have sex with me, but it can be such a relationship that you can be like, wait, did he just text it? And then the other person will be like, yeah, we're having sex. that can literally be healthier than if the text is harmless, but you feel so insecure about it that you don't say anything.
Yes, absolutely.
I have never texted my ex-girlfriend once.
Okay.
Well, absolutely. He went into his history. Absolutely. Okay. Here's a question for both of you though. Have you ever looked at your partner's texts without them knowing? Have you ever taken the phone and just did a little scroll?
And I've okay. I used to use his computer to use Photoshop, and his texts would be on there, and sometimes I'd do a little peek to be like, what's he talking about?
Yeah, that's the first thing I did when I got an iPhone. I said, uncouple that shit. You ain't popping up on my screen, honey. I need some privacy.
And I did feel bad about it, but also it was fine. And also, we are communicative, so it was weird. I was more like, sometimes I'm just like, what are you like when, like, when I'm not there? Like, it's more like that.
Yeah. I get that. George, have you?
I think similarly, like if it pops up, like we use his computer to like watch TV. And so I see the text coming in. Okay.
I never have. Like, it's funny. I actually don't want to. Like,
I don't think I do.
You
never looked at my text once.
Like, if I'm sitting next to you, I might just like look over your shoulder, but I've never taken your phone and like flip through it. I know the code. You know what I mean? I have the capacity.
We have each other's codes.
But I just haven't really, because it's also like, I don't want to see you talk no shit about me.
Well,
or see
I don't,
like,
I don't really do that. But also, it's some of the most boring texts you've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's either bits or it's just like, so we're meeting here. There's nothing emotional or like, I would say normal.
There's nothing normal.
In the sense that, like, it's nothing human in this. It's just, like, nonsense jokes and, like, you know.
Logistics.
Right.
I get that. Yeah. So, yeah, our way of saying you need to talk to him immediately.
Yeah, it's just there needs to be conversation and there needs to be honesty and
absolutely.
Trust.
Absolutely. And trust. And, honey, the way the conversation goes will help you answer all the other questions.
Yeah.
Sam, you've got this. Sam, tell Sam he's got this.
You've got this, Sam. From one Sam to another, you've got this. You know, it was crazy. I was going to make the joke right at the beginning when I heard his voice. I was like, oh, this is me. And then he said, my name is Sam. And I was like, oh, my God.
And of course, we are here at the end of the show. George, what did you have for lunch that day?
Oh, God. I mean, statistically, it was either cottage cheese out of the box.
What?
Worth the wait. Well worth the audience on the edge of their seats for an insane
cottage
answer.
Cottage
cheese out of the box.
Just like, what else? Are we putting anything on it?
There's nothing.
Well,
just,
you know, if
cheese?
I'm eating cottage cheese, one of my favorite foods to eat, I'll do a two pieces of toast, cottage cheese, and maybe a jam. Maybe an expensive blueberry jam.
Aren't you hungry after that?
Well, yeah. it was more.
Sam.
That's more of like a late breakfast type thing.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Sure,
okay.
Sure.
Yeah. Just to tide you over.
11 a.m.
Yes, that's an 11 classic 11 a.m. snack.
Classic 11 a.m. snack.
George, Sam.
I had leftover. Wait, did I get to go?
Wait, was that for today? That's not what I had today.
No, but just in general, right? That, like a year ago when we talked.
Today, in fact, was a sad day. I had a full Annie's mac and cheese, a full bowl of Annie's mac and cheese for lunch.
Well, that's nice. That really takes me back to college.
Yeah, yeah. It was. It's like not something I normally like. I try to actually eat pretty well, and today was not one of those days.
Sam, your lunch
today or a different time?
Statistically.
Okay. Well, statistically, probably I'm going to say tacos.
All right. All right. Vague. I don't have a cottage cheese and jam or tacos.
I mean, sorry. I do feel normally my lunch is more normal. I would say like a turkey sandwich or a salad is like generally what I have.
Wow, you are healthy. That is
when I'm like working, when I have like a job.
Yeah. That's very healthy. Well, okay, now you can say it, Angie.
George, Sam.
this is a dang delight.
A gosh darn delight, as I like to say.
Yes, thank you so much for coming on. Truly an honor to have the host of Australia
Lab. It was such
Lab.
A pleasure.
Thank you so much for having us.
Not to call anyone out, but I remember last time when we did the live show, we were like, oh, we thought this was also going on the podcast. And we were shocked when the episode never came out.
Yeah, we said we've been lied to, bamboozled.
So when we got this email, we were like, oh, finally, this is our chance to really shine.
Well, George, don't speak too soon. It hasn't been released yet.
That's right. This could be the one that really does us in.
Oh, my God. You guys keep me young. All right, you guys. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.